Hello, Valley Church. I am so happy to have this time together, this pandemic online worship time. Things are a little different this Mother's Day, but thank you for still making worship a part of your weekend. It is my total honor to be with you, my dear church family, this weekend. It's also my honor not to see you because I know right now some of you are in your boxers and you have questionable personal hygiene. I come from a dental family, and I'm just going to assume not a lot of you are flossing these days. So for that reason, I'm grateful there's just a little visual distance between us. For every other reason, though, I'm a little up and down with this idea of distance. It's a pesky concept for me. On the one hand, I'm so eager to close the distance between us, to see you all in person and to hug you and see your faces and to not worry that one of us is breathing too deeply. I'm so ready to not worry about breathing. On the other hand, we have a complete lack of distance at home. There's exactly zero distancing at my house. You know the sermon series Pastor Quentin has been sharing, We're All in This Together? Yeah, we sure are. All the time. In my normal life, I've come to realize people used to leave me physically. They'd go to school, and they'd go to work, and even the dog would nap in other rooms, but not now. No one leaves, ever. The dog has been walking so close to my feet, I've accidentally chucked him in his jaw several times. So we are all really, really close and really, really in this together. Here's the good news. Whether you are living closer than ever to the people in your house, or if you're living alone and suddenly noticing every single creak and bump in the place where you live, or if you're on the front lines of this and not home nearly as much as you want because you're busy helping those in desperate need, I want you to know you are seen and you are known and you are ferociously loved by the God who knows your address. This season, when we're all figuring out a new normal, this season is the perfect time to sink our weary hearts into God's steadfast and amazing grace. I've been thinking a lot about grace. I love how the Apostle Peter writes about it. He says in 1 Peter 4, "Each one has received a gift. Use it to serve others as good stewards of the varied grace of God." I just don't know of a word in the English language that is sweeter than the word grace. That word just makes my shoulders relax. It makes me take a deep, non-COVID breath. A simple definition of grace is this: unmerited favor, and I am in. Getting kindness that I don't deserve, in. Unearned generosity for a wretch like me, I am all in. Hit me. I'm all in for grace. Motherhood has given me all sorts of lessons on grace. Even if you're not a mother yourself, you know your own mom had a few opportunities to extend grace to you, and if you can't think of any scenarios where that was true, you are a liar. Don't lie. You're in church. Kind of. Moms have to extend grace on the regular. This is a good time to tell a story about my brother. It's awesome to have a microphone and a camera when your brother lives in California and can't correct your version of the events. My mom says that when Ryan was little, he hadn't yet developed social skills to say the right things to a woman, including his mother. One time, Ryan's teacher asked him what his mom did, and I'm pretty sure she was getting at, you know, what does your mom do for her job, for her work? Here's the correct answer to that question. My mom was a stay-at-home mother of three. She also played in the first violin section of the Des Moines Symphony. She was co-founder of the Suzuki Strings Institute here in Des Moines, and she taught a full private studio of violin students. None of that made the list. Here is Ryan's answer that the teacher transcribed into his cute, "I love mommy" craft. What my mom does: my mom sits on the couch and eats Oreos. That's it. That was what Ryan picked up out of all that my mom was laying down. Moms get lots of good practice extending grace. I have my own versions of this story, like the preschool art assignment on which my daughter Thea had to guess my age, and she said she thought I was approximately 88 years old. Or when my son Mitch came up to me and patted my belly, my vacant 2 years postpartum belly, and said, "Mom, do you have a baby in there?" Or another time, again, Mitch, who's out of the will now that I'm thinking about it, was about five and he was staring at my profile and I asked him what he was thinking. I think I was hoping that he'd say, "You know, you're just such a great mom. Thanks for being so patient with me when I threw your cell phone in the toilet this morning." No. Instead, he said, "Oh, I'm just looking at your beard." I just want to say, I had three young children at that time. My tweezers time was very limited. Whether you are a mom or you have a mom, and I'm pretty sure that covers everybody, we need grace. We need to receive it and we need to give it. In God's beautiful economy, we get to do both. Peter said it in that verse, each one has received gifts of grace, and now we get out there and act as good stewards of grace. We get and we give. First, the receiving part. Each of us has received gifts from the God who made us and loves us and knows us. And I'm just wondering, how's your gift giving these days? Mother's Day is a great time for giving gifts. I hope you remembered way in advance this year, because pretty much the only thing open today is Quick Trip. And I don't have a lot of suggestions for resurrecting those options, unless your mom is like really into jerky. I've asked a lot of people through the years about the best gifts they've received and the worst. The worst ones are definitely way more fun to talk about. So here are some highlights for worst gifts received. And I just want to say these were actual humans that I met. Worst gift list, number one. One woman I asked said she received a toilet seat cover from her mother-in-law. It was wrapped. Another woman told me once that she received the Bible on tape from her mother-in-law. Only all the books were missing except three of the minor prophets, all of which had themes of God's wrath. I just want to note that was a different woman, different mother-in-law, mothers-in-law. Time to step up your game. And my personal favorite, one woman for Christmas received from her husband a manure spreader. This couple is still married, which is the strongest testament to true love I have ever encountered. Here's a freebie, guys. As a general rule, avoid manure in your gift giving. Just stick to tulips. So I've heard all sorts of total bombs in the worst gifts ever category. On the other side of that coin, though, I've heard some really great answers to the question of the best gifts people have received. One very fortunate woman I know got a surprise trip to Italy, bags packed in the car. Back in the day, we flew on planes and chose Italy as our destination. My friend Sarah once got tickets to go to the Kentucky Derby, hats included. Those are some pretty fantastic gifts, but don't worry, all you jerky buyers who are really starting to sweat it. The best gifts can be the most simple. Maybe the best gift I have ever received was from my dad a couple Christmases ago. When I was growing up, we would visit my grandparents in their small town in Northwest Iowa. I loved these visits for lots of reasons, including I got to ride my aunt's old banana seat bike all over town till the noon whistle blew, and then I'd head back for lunch. Glory, freedom. Grandma also didn't seem to have any concerns about nutrition, so we would eat Fruit Loops and Pringles and homemade desserts about 80 times a day. It was awesome. But the biggest draw at my grandparents' house was the cookie swing. My grandparents had a spacious yard on one side of their 100-year-old farmhouse, and in that yard stood the cookie swing. My grandpa had soldered together two oil drums, and he leaned a ladder up against the drums, and then from his towering oak tree, he had hung a big fat rope. At the end of that rope was a wooden swing he'd cut out in the shape of an octagon, roughly in the shape of a cookie. Cookies flowed like milk and honey, so I think that's why we named it that. So I think I have some photos here so you can see for yourselves. We would grab that rope that hung underneath the cookie swing. We'd climb up the ladder to the top of the barrels, and then we'd hop on and lean back and jump off that tower to swing long and high and squealing, our stomachs dropping. It was like our own private roller coaster. I just remember wide open Iowa sky and feeling far above all the cornfields that edged Grandma's garden. It was perfect. My grandpa went home to Jesus several years ago, and when my grandma moved to be closer to one of her daughters, they went through all the things that made up decades of growing up and growing out of that old farmhouse. My dad called and asked me if I wanted anything in particular from the house, but the cookie swing was nowhere to be found. No worries, I said. I was content with one of my grandma's pie plates, but still I was quietly disappointed that that beloved swing was lost. Last Christmas, I opened a big, unwieldy box from my dad, and do you know what was in it? A brand new cookie swing, made by my dad's hands, complete with a fat rope already threaded through. I burst into tears, and so did he. Best, sweetest, most meaningful gift ever. Here's the thing about a great gift. A great gift says a lot about the giver. I knew my dad's heart better when I opened that box. I could imagine all the time that he had spent, first with an idea and then carefully making that swing, even finding a box that would fit such an unusual gift. I see my dad and his love for me when I look at that swing. We know the heart of God better when we look at the gifts he gives. And one of his very best gifts is grace. When we get a peek at the unparalleled, unfettered grace God offers us, no strings attached, we can more clearly see his heart. And he has a heart that loves us like crazy. A heart that's not waiting for us to clean up or tidy our lives or sweep out the dirt and the grime of our hearts and our behavior and our brokenness before we come to him. He's a God of grace. His gifts are entirely undeserved and exactly what we need, apart from anything we can give to him. When I hear stories about people experiencing, really encountering grace for the first time, they make me cry like a baby. I do cry often, in general, and usually like a baby. I mean, for example, if people crying in your presence makes you feel uncomfortable, you should not watch the Olympics with me, or commercials, or any movies set in wartime, or peacetime with a love story, or go to weddings with me, or watch family home videos, and they don't even have to be videos of my own family. So, these grace stories make me cry. I don't remember much about the day I became a Jesus follower, but I do remember my first experience with grace. I was a freshman in college, and I remember where I was sitting in my dorm, and I remember being suddenly physically gutted by the realization that God's grace was real and personal and amazing in a way that that old song could only try to describe. I got it for the first time in my bones. My heart and my mind both got it. I was, a perfectionist and annoying, earn your way kind of girl. And that day in my freshman dorm, I got a beautiful course correction. I understood with my whole self that grace was not earned. That just like the writer of Hebrews said, I could approach the throne of grace, the God of grace, with confidence. That day in my dorm room, and many, many days since, God's grace overwhelms me. When I truly, honestly look at my sin and my brokenness, I know my need for help. I know my need for rescue. Rescue comes in the form of God's amazing grace, all wrapped up in that unwieldy box and given without any strings attached. I wish I could see your faces right now because I know some of your stories, and you have been changed from head to toe by the extravagant grace of God. Once you encounter the real deal, there's no going back. All the counterfeit junk I thought was real is just flimsy, like working myself into knots in order to make God impressed with me. Real grace puts that to shame. Or putting on some sort of veneer or some mask to impress people. Real grace cannot even be bothered. Carrying around shame and guilt and living a half-life instead of the abundant one that Jesus offers, real grace kicks that to the curb. This makes me think about coffee. I'm 44, and I've just started to drink coffee. Now, I don't think about that too long. It's weird. Summer and I were just talking about this. She's a new coffee person, too, and we cannot, for the life of us, understand how we raise children to this point without coffee. I have this question for you. Have you tried coffee? It's amazing. You have to try it right now. I went straight to the good stuff in this coffee experience. I drink a cappuccino every morning, and I am in love with it. I didn't start with Folgers or Sanka and like work my way up. I went straight to Fantastic, guided by my husband, who was already a coffee snob and apparently way more productive due to all of his years with coffee. Once you've tried the real deal with coffee, you do not go back. There's no backsliding to Sanka. Same thing with grace. Once you've tried the real thing, once you have received forgiveness you didn't earn, the offer of an abundant life you cannot possibly get on your own, once you've met up with real grace, nothing else will do. So we get this great gift of grace, and then we get to give it to the people in our lives. I think my favorite part of that verse in 1 Peter 4 is the varied grace part. It says, each one has received a gift. Use it to serve others as good stewards of the varied grace of God. Listen, at the risk of sounding like an after-school special, I need to say this. We are different. And God knows that. His grace does not come one size fits all. It's varied, and the way we express it is varied. One translation says that we're to give each other manifold grace. It's such a great old word. Multifaceted grace, multicolored grace. The God who made us to be different communicates his grace to us in all sorts of colors, to our unique hearts and our minds, and then he asks us to use all that uniqueness to communicate his grace to his kids. The older I get, the more I'm convinced that people have a native language in their hearts, and God is the one who knows how to speak all of them, how to blow our minds with grace in a language that we can understand. Here's one way to think about it. Remember how I cry about everything? Well, one surefire way to get the tears to fall is to show me photos of my kids when they were tiny. Here's a photo of them now. I can look at this photo and not cry because I know those exact same faces are the ones who will ask me what's for dinner tonight. Low crying risk. A photo like this, however, is a clear and present danger. I cannot. I'll just let you do it. When my kids were about this age, Thea, the youngest, wasn't super clear when she would speak. Might have been the teeth. I couldn't understand her very well sometimes, but I never had to fear because my two older kids served as interpreters. They totally knew what Thea was saying around her teeth, and they would interpret for me. Have you had this happen in your house? The older siblings speak younger sibling? It's fantastic. Anna and Mitch spoke Thea. They spoke her language and were able to help me understand. God is like that. He speaks to us and shows us grace in a way that we get in our native grace language. Grace isn't just some word that describes a transaction, like some cold technical term that helps us understand doctrine or a $10 theology word. It's so much deeper and wider and fuller than that. We have to resist the impulse to understand the word grace as something that we've seen on a t-shirt or a candle, and instead look at it like the New Testament writers did. They understood grace as something warm and joyful, something relational and specific, something like a spiritual fingerprint, communicated to me, communicated to you in varied, manifold, unique ways. The idea isn't just that Jesus loves us. This we know, for the Bible tells us so. That's a great song. But there's way more to it. Jesus likes us, this we know. I'm just starting to really sink my toes into that truth. Jesus likes me. He likes the way he wired me. I'm not saying he's going to leave me where I am or ignore my mess and my sin and my brokenness. He is working on me for sure, all the time, and best when I cooperate with him a little bit. But in the meantime, and from the beginning, Jesus likes me and he likes you. During worship last week, Andy and Summer reminded us of that beautiful passage in Zephaniah that the God of the universe sings songs over us. I don't think he's talking about like a school fight song, like a general peppy rah-rah song made for the masses. I don't think that. I think he sings songs that have our names in them, songs that make sense to our weary hearts, songs that are drenched in personal, specific grace. God used us through this lens of undeserved favor, earned by and paid in full by his son in his death on the cross. The lens is grace. The songs are his, and he sings over you with your name in every verse and every chorus. When we can catch this kind of vision of grace, things get really beautiful. Hasn't it been just the most phenomenal thing to see how all different sorts of people are extending grace to each other during this season? People on their balconies and their fire escapes serenading medical workers as they walk home at the ends of horribly hard days. Medical workers, first responders, grocery store clerks, all sorts of folks walking into the fray, into risk, in order to comfort and heal and help. People figuring out ways to connect and love each other during a time when we really can't rely on our usual. I loved this photo. Neighbors eating together in a way that would have seemed ridiculous a few months ago, but now seems tender and kind. Learning a new grace language, giving each other what we don't necessarily deserve and what we haven't necessarily earned, but what we desperately need. God builds balcony tables for us all the time. He extends grace to us in all sorts of creative and personal ways. I love the way the Apostle John wrote about this. He said, "We have all benefited from the rich blessings Jesus brought to us. Grace upon grace. Grace upon grace. We have one after another and more than we need." Today is a great day to try out the grace upon grace idea with each other. Mother's Day can be just glorious. It can be the day someone else changes the toilet paper roll, the day someone else empties the dishwasher, the day you get to sleep in, or take a nap, or even better, when someone else takes an especially long nap. Mother's Day can also be brutal. It can be a day when you are forced to confront the brokenness in your relationship with your mom or your daughter. It can be a day when words like infertility and miscarriage feel like they're blinking lights above every one of your thoughts. I know that ache. It can be the day you used to spend with your mom or your grandma or the woman who is most like a mother to you, and now you're in the waiting until you see that sweet lady in heaven. It can be a day when you take stock and see all that isn't instead of all that is. Today is a good day to extend grace upon grace. Let's be gentle with each other's hearts, whether those hearts are full or shattered. Let's speak all kinds of languages so that we can see each other well and love each other well. And most of all, extend grace to ourselves and to each other well today. If you surrendered your heart to Jesus, you are now drenched in grace. He paid an exorbitant fee for our freedom, and he doesn't only love us, he likes us too. Each one of us has received the gift of grace, and now we get the honor of giving it to those around us, speaking all sorts of grace languages. Let's get after it then. Love each other well, serve each other well, empty that dishwasher, both levels. And really, right now, go brush and floss. Happy Mother's Day, everybody.